You are Locked On Heat, your daily Miami Heat podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello, Heat Nation, and welcome to your daily Miami Heat podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, the only podcast that breaks down every game, news item, rumor, and more. Thank you for subscribing on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, or on Himalaya. My name is David Ramil. The Ringer published a piece on Thursday entitled The Top 25 NBA Players of the First 25-ish Games. Basic premise is that almost every team has played about 25 games or so. The Heat are just one short at 18-6, and evaluating which players have been the best during the season. Ringer staff voted, an average was calculated, and voila, a final ranking was established. The piece listed players in the top 25 and showed their lowest ranking along with their highest ranking from those polled. And Miami's Jimmy Butler cracked the top 10 in the final poll. He came in at the 8th rank. His lowest rank among those voted was 18th. His highest rank was 5th. So somebody on the Ringer staff thinks that Jimmy Butler's a top 5 player. Either way, he's a top 10 player, according to a large group of people who generally know a lot about basketball and watch a lot of basketball and write about basketball. And so I think it's important to see that a national perspective is building on Jimmy's impact. In fact, this is the description on what they included along with Jimmy's rank in that final piece there. Fit matters. This is a quote from that piece. There was a time barely a year ago when it felt that Philadelphia was the perfect spot for the Mercurial wing. As it turned out, Butler was in cure-all for the Sixers, and the Sixers, who have never been a pick-and-roll heavy team under head coach Brett Brown, which is a system that Butler thrives in, maybe they weren't the right partner for Butler either. The sample size is small, but Butler and Miami seem like a solid union. His usage rate has climbed a bit from his time in Philly, and his counting stats have improved accordingly. Butler's averaging more points, rebounds, assists, and steals per game than he did with the Sixers. He's also tying a career high in free throws made per game and averaging a new career high in free throw attempts per game. As a result, Butler's helped the Heat exceed all reasonable expectations in the standings. Butler once invoked the old cliche about how all he wants to do is help his team win, something that irks Sixers fans when he signaled his desire to leave for Miami, but so far that's exactly what he's doing with the Heat. So, a pretty fitting encapsulation of everything that Jimmy means for this team. He faced some criticism for leaving Philadelphia. He decided to come to Miami. He's done a fantastic job here, and he's done everything possible to help this team win. And I think he's being recognized as such. One of the things that I had pointed out at the start of the season, even before the first preseason game, I think, I talked about Jimmy Butler as a possible MVP candidate. Because I knew, as something that we've seen a lot of over from him, is that he is just synergized. Something about his impact has just become a catalyst for this team. He's gotten everybody to play together cohesively, to change the system and the approach of the game, the way they pass the ball. Bam Adebayo told me the word is pure. That's the word that he uses, and he's used it a lot in some national media pieces that have come up. But the game has become a pure one from Miami's perspective. They move the ball. They're looking for cutters. They're different. That system has gotten bogged down in recent games as things have gotten away, as injuries have crept up and things of that sort. But overall, that's the approach to this team. And you see it in the way that the players interact with one another, the way that they move on the floor. They're always looking for each other to get the best look open for one another. There's an unselfish level of play there, and I think Jimmy has instituted that system and taken it to another level there. I'll also mention that he ranked just below the following seven players: Karl-Anthony Towns, Kawhi Leonard, Luka Doncic, Anthony Davis, LeBron James, James Harden, and Giannis Antetokounmpo. So that's pretty cool. With the exception of Karl-Anthony Towns, the remaining six players on those seven are all considered the game's elite and certainly viewed as early MVP candidates. And I think Butler should be considered among those. Consider also that he missed a number of games, that he's still trying to work his way out to as part of this new team, and it's already been a significant impact from him. And I think the fact that everybody's starting to recognize that is fantastic for Jimmy, fantastic for the Heat in general. But even more surprisingly, there is a second player on this list. Bam Adebayo comes in ranked 24th overall, according to the Ringer's piece. The lowest rank? Well, he wasn't ranked at all, so somebody or some buddies think that he's not a top 25 player, but somebody ranked him as high as 17th, so that's pretty impressive that he could be a top 20 player. This is a description that came with him. Weighing all around performance is an extraordinary challenge in an exercise like this. It's easy to see a star guard's point total and push him up the list, but how does a player like Adebayo compare? It's not as if his stats suffer exactly. Among centers, only Nikola Jokic and Karl-Anthony Towns record more assists than Adebayo. In a third year, Miami big is averaging better than one block and steal per game. The difference, as this is my point now, the difference is that between Jokic and Towns, his defense is better. So not only is he doing everything he can as a playmaker, something that Jokic and Towns do, but he's playing better defense than they do. But it's also the spaces, to continue the description, between the stats in which he has excelled this season, the shots he deters with his defensive dexterity, the openings he creates with his gallops in transition. On a team stocked with shooters, Adebayo provides a little bit of everything to complement his teammates' abilities. So kind of just, reiterating a lot of what I've talked about, what I've written about, what a lot of people around the country are starting to say more and more often, that Bam Adebayo is just an excellent, all-around, impactful player. He does so many of the little things. The winning plays. He makes plays for others. He does everything on defense. His versatility is, well, I don't know many players at his position or any position that are as good and as versatile. And I think that's something that has just unlocked this team in many, many ways. If you're looking at Jimmy as the catalyst in some ways, as far as institutionally or personality-wise, and having an understanding that you can play a little different, a little bit more free, then Bam is the one who actually makes it a reality in many ways. Sure, Jimmy does as well by virtue of his playmaking, by virtue of his support of Tyler Hero and others, but I think you have Bam out there as an extension of that in many, many ways, and that's why they're a very good duo. Some of the players at a quick glance that Bam ranked above: Chris Middleton, Jaylen Brown, Gordon Hayward, Tobias Harris, Kyle Lowry, Kyrie Irving, Blake Griffin, Kevin Love, Kristaps Porzingis, Russell Westbrook, Paul Millsap, Chris Paul, Stephen Adams, Andrew Wiggins, DeMar DeRozan, LaMarcus Aldridge, Draymond Green, and lastly, and perhaps more importantly, Hassan Whiteside. That's a pretty extensive list there. Now, I know a lot of those players are hurt. You can include Kevin Durant on that list as well if you wanted to. But the reality is that there is a shift in the narrative regarding what Bam Adebayo does. And I think a lot of people are starting to recognize that he's become this incredibly impactful player. This is also the best case scenario for Bam. The contrived issues with Jimmy's decision to join Miami was that he leaving two quote-unquote superstars in Ben Simmons and Joel Embiid, as well as Harris and the rest of the Sixers team, for a team without enough talent to win, much less contend for a title. "Enjoy your retirement, Jimmy," yelled Sixers Twitter, as if Miami was a league Century Village adult community. This is vindication at the highest level for Jimmy, for the Heat, and most of all for Bam, who was stuck behind Whiteside for two seasons, something in hindsight was probably necessary for his growth and current success. But the national media attention has been fantastic for Bam, for the team in general. And there's an understanding here that maybe you don't have to put up gaudy stats to become an impactful player. I think a lot of that narrative has shifted over the recent years because of Draymond Green's impact. Something that I wrote about in my piece about Bam a couple weeks ago when I talked to Alvin Gentry and he made that comparison. It's becoming more and more, I think, common to make that association because Adebayo is hard to pin down as far as a description is concerned. And even he said so at Thursday's practice right before the Lakers game on Friday. He had a very, very long practice. He came out and he spoke about some of the people that have influenced him in the past, have been role models for him: Kevin Garnett, Rasheed Wallace, Tim Duncan, and Draymond Green were among those that he listed there. So fantastic to see Bam recognized from the national media, not just on this Ringer piece, but from Kevin O'Connor in the Ringer, others, Jeff Ziglet from USA Today is obviously working on a Bam Adebayo piece that probably should be coming out soon. And Michael Pina for SB Nation wrote a fantastic piece that you should check him out. He's actually going to be on our show at some point next week to talk about Bam and go in length at all the work that he put in, talking to John Calipari and others about how Bam's transformed his game, become one of the better players in the game. But coming up next, is there a way to shut down LeBron James and Anthony Davis? I'll give you the plan for that. You're listening to Locked On Heat. Game versus LeBron James still a marquee event in Miami? I'll get into that in the next segment, but first this quote from Jimmy Butler on Thursday following that long practice I mentioned in the previous segment. "We've got a job to do. Nobody's intimidated. We're going to be prepared, and we're expecting to win. That's Jimmy Butler talking about the upcoming matchup with the Los Angeles Lakers, who are in town on Friday for what just seems to be an incredible game. There is so much energy building up to this. Not only did the Heat have this extra long practice, they took Wednesday off after their overtime win on Tuesday. They practiced for a very, very long session. Media was supposed to be there around 12:15. We weren't actually allowed to talk to players for about an hour after that, so things were absolutely delayed. They really wanted to get into some of the nitty-gritty, the nuts and bolts about what's going on with that team. And they're anticipating a huge media contingency. I think there'll be there'll be a number of people from around the league there. ESPN's going to be in town. There is going to be so much of a media presence there. And it's going to be a very, very exciting one. So one note, and I'll point this out also, something I tweeted about before. This is a game that's being televised at 7 p.m. So that's when coverage will start for that game. It's supposed to have started at 8 o'clock. It's going to be a national televised game, like I said. And so I know that people expected it to be at 8. Maybe they'll show up late. There's going to be traffic. It's downtown Miami. All the number of excuses that will impact a normal crowd against for any normal game, this is going to be a little bit more than that because it's the Lakers, because it's so much attention, because there's going to be more people, more everything that you can possibly imagine. So if you're going to tomorrow's game, you're listening to this podcast, just a reminder, show up. I think it's good to do what you can to be there as early as possible. I know that's asking for a lot, but if you can make it there earlier than usual, please do so. So the team's also a little shorthanded. They won't be with Goran Dragic on the lineup, no Justice Winslow either, and no Deion Waiters. And more importantly, Tyler Hero was sick and might not be available on Friday. He actually missed Thursday's practice, and so he's probably listed as doubtful at this point. So without Dragic, without Winslow, obviously you're missing some playmaking, some off-the-bench scoring. You're missing some incredible length and defense and versatility in Winslow in particular, and you're missing Tyler's shooting if he misses that game. So that's going to be an interesting one. I would expect that he's actually going to be out on Friday. My feeling was that he's probably not going to be in the lineup, and if that's the case, then Miami's going to be extremely shorthanded. But you know this team, they don't make excuses, they don't think about it too much, and so they'll just move on to the next man available. Obviously, without Deion there, it's going to be hard to find who the next person is. KZ Okpala already sent down to the Sioux Falls Skyforce. There aren't a lot of options for this team yet or available, and so they've got to find something within. If you recall the November 9 loss to the Lakers, Miami tried to use a lot of zone defenses to throw off the Lakers. Anthony Davis absolutely destroyed that. If you can recall how it worked out, they were trying to shift everybody onto the perimeter, leaving the paint open and trying to, again, move on to Anthony Davis and keep him from getting easy looks, but it just worked out so easily. He always had, because of his length and size, he had 1 foot in and out of the paint at all times, and whenever they would toss the ball into him, he would absolutely just bust that zone defense by getting to the rim very, very easily because of that incredible length, finishing in traffic, drawing a foul in the process, or even shooting from a mid-range shot there and knocking it down with ease. This is going to be a challenge for Miami. I wouldn't expect much zone. They haven't used a lot of zone. I'm trying to recall what games they've used zone since the Lakers game, but they're not going to use it again, I think, because, well, Davis is such a challenge to follow. But given that it's in Miami, I think the Heat will get a friendlier whistle trying to defend AD and LeBron. And I think you need to put Adebayo on Anthony Davis right away. Like, that would be my strategy if I'm Eric Spoelstra. Before, if you recall, also in that loss, Myers Leonard started off on AT with Bam shifting onto JaVale McGee, who is technically their starting center. And that kind of ended after a while because McGee was getting easy points because of his speed and length. He was getting past Myers Leonard. And, of course, Anthony Davis being Anthony Davis, he was going to get a lot of points too. So my feeling is, you start Adebayo on AD. That's the first thing you do. And then, in order to limit JaVale McGee's impact, you start Chris Silva. Bring him off the bench to start. Move Myers Leonard to the backup rotation there. Just for one game. See how it works. And then you bring in James Johnson and LeBron James. I think James has not played much. I think he's ready. I think he's capable. He's healthy. And he's shown in the past that he can handle this challenge. You're not asking him to go out there and provide 25 points. You're not asking him to make, 15 assists for others. You're asking him to get an elbow on James, to throw what he can at LeBron's way, to limit what he can do as far as his playmaking ability and things of that sort. And I think James Johnson is up for that challenge. So you start James Johnson and LeBron. You put Chris Silva in there because of his energy, because of his rebounding, because of his impact and tirelessness. He's going to pick up a few fouls along the way, but it's okay. JaVale only starts for a few minutes a game anyway. He like Myers-Leonard, starts, and then he doesn't play much after that because you can go with Anthony Davis at the five. You can bring in Dwight Howard off the bench, etc. So that's okay. You use Silva sparingly, but he goes in there with immediate energy so that you don't get into too much of a deficit right away. And because of that tireless energy, because of those rebounds and everything else that Chris provides, he's going to be an immediately impactful player in a very positive way. He stays physical. He's mobile. He can do a lot to shift onto other players if necessary. McGee's just a basic dunker. He's going to be around the rim. But I think Silva's energy can challenge that. He's going to work for those rebounds. He's going to keep McGee to the best of his ability off the paint and away from the rim. And I think he's going to get a friendlier whistle. I think, you know, in Los Angeles, clearly that wasn't going to be the case. But in Miami, he'll draw a few fouls his way, and that's important. And that gets McGee out of the lineup right away, forces Frank Vogel to go with a different change in his rotation, and that's important. So I think with that shift in that lineup, in the starting lineup, Jimmy Butler can move on to Danny Green, keep him from going off, roving on defense on occasion, anticipating passing lanes, doing all the things that Jimmy does well. He's not going to have to expend a lot of energy on LeBron James right away. He can move on to Danny Green. And if you want to, you can use Kendrick in that same position. You can have Kendrick Nunn following Danny Green on multiple screens. I think he has the speed and the tenacity to keep up with him. He doesn't have to be glued to Danny Green right away. He just has to be a body, make things different, you know, change things up for Danny Green, make it difficult for him to get off his shots as he's coming around screens and doing what he does from the perimeter. And then if that's the case, so you slide Jimmy onto Kentavious Caldwell-Pope, who isn't always a legitimate threat. He had 15 points in the Lakers' most recent win over Orlando, but that's not the norm. And so with Jimmy limiting what KCP does, he can just play occasional defense on him and then shift onto LeBron James. Again, doing what he does as a rover, anticipating passes, breaking up passes, forcing steals and turnovers that lead to huge transition buckets. And it works out so well. Duncan Robinson comes off the bench then because James Johnson is starting and because Tyler Hero is probably not going to be available because Goran Dragic isn't there. Duncan has a huge green light coming off the bench. He'll be the top scoring option and he can put those points in, of course. And Myers-Leonard can come in and space the floor a little bit, get Dwight Howard away from the rim on defense, and he's going to be able to space the floor. Dwight Howard can't compete with Myers-Leonard down the perimeter. Dwight's not that kind of a perimeter defender, never has been over the course of his career. So it works out very well. Kelly Olynyk can do that as well. If Olynyk's out there spreading the floor, I think he's quicker than Dwight. I think he can also space it very well. He can also make plays because it'll be a wide open, spaced out field there. It makes so much sense to do this. And I know maybe I'm crazy. Maybe I'm thinking about this in a very limited or obtuse way. But I can see why this would absolutely work. It limits what their strengths are, and it highlights what Miami's strength is, their depth, even when they have injuries to a number of key players. And on top of that, it saves Jimmy's energy because what the Lakers do better than any team is defend at a very high level. And so I think it's going to be a tight game if you shift this, you know, the rotations a little bit. And if it's a tight game, then you're going to need Jimmy Butler to come up big in the fourth quarter. And if that's the case, you can have him shift onto LeBron at that point, saving his energy because he's been kind of just shading KCP for the most part. He can shift onto LeBron, limit what he does in the waning moments of the fourth quarter, and then have enough energy to come up with the kind of clutch buckets that he probably will need to put in order to help Miami escape with a win. And that can absolutely shift things in Miami's favor with some tighter defense, a friendly whistle, and just this slight change in defensive personnel. So if you think I'm crazy, let me know, but I think it will work. We'll see what Eric Spoelstra does. Ultimately, I don't expect Spo to make that change. Just Spo does what he does. He loves the idea of Miami sticking to their guns and doing what they do best, but this is an opportunity here because of the injuries to this team to do things a little different and come out with a win, and we'll see if it works out. Coming up next, will there be boos for LeBron in Miami? You're listening to Locked On Heat. If you're a Spotify listener, use Spotify Wrapped to show us your top Locked On podcast for the year. Take a screenshot and tag us on Twitter using @LockedOnLive and @LockedOnHeat, and we'll share it and we'll retweet it. Remember to listen to and subscribe to new and archived episodes of Locked On Heat on Himalaya, as well as on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and Google Podcasts. If you're in iTunes, please leave a rating and review, especially if it's a good one. So one of the points that Spo mentioned after practice on Thursday is that the return of LeBron is less about him and more about the Lakers coming into town. But, you know, it's interesting. I don't know whether I take those comments seriously from Eric Spoelstra. I mean, I don't think he was trying to be purposely disingenuous, but I think he's also trying to downplay it, make this more about the Heat having to rise up to the challenge to face a very, very good team. He did say that. They're too good. He knows that they have to play an almost perfect game to win against the Lakers because they're 22-3. They've played extremely well this season, better than a lot of people expected them to be. There has not been any kind of major dysfunction or issues. Frank Vogel has done a much better job than most people expected at juggling things, even with injuries and things of that sort. The team is healthy now. They're playing at a high level. So this team, the Lakers, that is, in order to knock them off, you're going to have to play virtually a perfect game. And so I think Spoelstra wants to make sure that that's the mindset for Miami, like Jimmy mentioned, that they're focused, they're prepared, and they're going to go in there and do everything they can to knock off the Lakers. And if that's the case, then, you know, it's not about LeBron. It's not about Anthony Davis, although clearly these players are aware of what that challenge represents. You know, to try and stop LeBron, even at age 36 and doing everything he does in his 17th season, is still a difficult one. He's still one of the top players in the game, and I think he will continue to be that for a number of years. But, you know, I do disagree with Spo's comments. I think he's also trying to smooth things over after James left in 2014 and the 5 years since then. LeBron's been welcomed back with, you know, with Cleveland and Los Angeles, but I don't know, because, you know, on one hand, Spoelstra's saying, you know, it's not about LeBron, it's about Miami facing the Lakers. Sure, maybe that's possible. I don't think that's the case. And then there was a debate among reporters right before having talked to Spoelstra about whether or not LeBron would come home or return to Miami and get booed. I know he doesn't get booed in Cleveland. I don't think he's been booed in Miami. I think he's had some issues there. Maybe some people have hurled some negativity his way, especially in 2014, because it was such a raw departure and everything else that came with it. But is he still a player that gets booed there? I don't know. I'm curious to see what that energy is going to be like on Friday, because it should be an exciting game and an exciting crowd. But boos? I don't see it. I just don't know why you're booing LeBron. I mean, because of what happened in 2014? Yeah, you might have some personal animosity towards him. You might feel that he betrayed the team, that he screwed them over, things of that kind of nature. It's possible. But to go out of your way to boo him, I don't know that anybody still feels the sharp sting of any kind of personal betrayal there. I'm wondering whether or not it happens, but I think it's going to be a fun game. Again, so much is building up towards this, and you know what? This is also the first night of a two-night back-to-back set. The Heat travel to Dallas on Saturday following the Lakers game, and so it's going to be a tremendous challenge for them over the next two nights. But this is an incredible opportunity for Miami. I think as much as we've seen a lot of buildup after the Toronto Raptors win, again in overtime just a few weeks ago, this understanding that Miami is a good team, a contending team, and since then the Raptors have kind of taken a step down a little bit. I think they were kind of exposed by Miami, maybe beaten in a way that they weren't expecting to. Maybe I'm overstating things a little bit, but either way, that's just how it feels. And conversely, Miami just seems to be getting more and more attention from everybody, from Stephen A. Smith to writers across the league and across the country. And there's just so much going on with this team. You know, to be able to beat the Lakers at home would be a huge statement. And I know a lot of people will downplay whether or not a single game during the regular season is much of a statement, but it certainly could be. It could be a really impressive thing Maybe it's not important. Maybe it's not important for them to make that statement. Maybe, you know, what happens in December doesn't mean anything considering what you could possibly do in April or May or June. But I think for a lot of fans, and I think Heat fans of the NBA in general, to see what Miami can do if they play their very best game, where they're moving the ball around, where they play defense at a high level. And it's going to be tough to do without the personnel that's currently injured. But if they play their game somehow, if they're able to stick to the tenets of what makes this team exciting and fun to watch, it could be a very fun game. And I could imagine a lot of people starting to see what I and all of you have seen for the past few months. If you've been following this team regularly, you know that this is an incredible game. That is an incredible team that makes plays for others, that plays pure basketball, to use Bam Adebayo's words. So it should be a very fun matchup. It should be a great one. If you're going, again, remember to be there early and often. Get there as early as you possibly can. It's going to be a challenge to get to the arena with traffic and all everything else, but do your best, and I'll do my best to provide a recap after Friday's game, or at the very least on Saturday after the team travels to Dallas and to face that game, the Mavericks, for the second game of a back-to-back set. That's it for today. You can connect with me on Twitter using the hashtag AskLOHeat or email me at LockedOnHeat@gmail.com. I'm David Ramil, signing off and thanking you, as always, for your support.
Yeah! Wrap it up, Dean.